Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
All right, time for us to turn our attention to the big game. Tomorrow morning at 8.15 in Shizuoka Stadium in Japan, it's Ireland against the host nation. I'm delighted to say Johnny Murphy is here with us to help preview the game. Johnny, before we talk about tomorrow, I'd like to talk a little bit about yesterday and the stunning success that you had on the race course. And yet none of us got a tip from you, Johnny. What happened?
Well, I didn't even get a tip myself, Ger, to be honest. It was very much a surprise. None of us had any, we didn't have a cent on her. So yesterday was supposed to be about getting her confidence back and come forward, and Shane just said she stuck her head out and got in front. So always nice to have a 12-1 winner, but it's even better when you manage to get some money on, which we didn't, unfortunately.
Oh well, not to worry, I'm sure you will again. What was the name of the horse? This was a Gorin yesterday.
Yeah, Gorin, yeah. So Tumain. So it's the syndicate with myself, Conor Murray, Keith Earls, Andrew Conway and Damon Varley. So I'd set that up about 2 years ago. She's won three races for us now, so hopefully she can kick on and win a couple more, all going well.
Well, hopefully it's a harbinger of things to come for the lads for the weekend.
Exactly.
Keith Earls obviously back in the team. A clear sign that Joe Schmidt wants to get him game time, but also that like he is one of the most important players. Andrew Conway's playing really, 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 really well as he's ever done in his career, but Keith Earls is Keith Earls.
Yeah, and I think, you know, whereas he's form over the last kind of 2 years, 3 years probably has shown, you know, that he's world class. He was very unlucky probably not to go on that Lions tour 2 years ago, and really since then he's just really kicked on. And yeah, it's kind of just, it shows you the strength of the squad that we have, that, you know, the rotation, for the want of a better word, that's happening now. And you know, the likes of Rob and Keith and those guys coming back into the fray after not playing last weekend, what was such a good performance.
Yeah, and a very pressurised environment last weekend. This weekend, it feels less pressure, and yet actually, this is the one that they just need to make sure there's no blips here, because then it's plain sailing the rest of the way.
Well, you would think so. I think this weekend there's going to be a huge amount of emotion involved for the Japanese and the atmosphere. So there's going to be a lot of pressure there on the home side to perform. But I think, you know, Ireland's pressure game is, you know, you would expect that, you know, Japan will probably crack first. So it's to manage that, that know that they're going to come out, you know, kind of, you know, very high tempoed, you know, be very aggressive at the contact, manage that for the first 10-15 minutes, and then really try and just put the pressure back on them and let them crack. But you know, I think this weekend there seems to be a bit of a pivot shift in terms of talking to people in and around camp and stuff. Like during the week, you know, you'd be chatting to a couple of people and it's like, it's just a start. It's just a start. And that's it. It's the end of the conversation. There's no, oh yeah, look, it went well and we were happy enough. It was literally like all the word coming out from everyone. It's just a start. And that kind of, to me, shows that they're honed in. They have a mission and they're not going to end till that mission is over. It just seems to be completely different to the vibes and the chat that was going on over the last 6 months.
That's actually really good to hear, because we obviously as a rugby nation have been entirely focused on getting over a quarter final, almost as if that's the World Cup final. It's like, it's almost like we were the All Blacks for that period of time where they couldn't win the tournament, except we were like, we can't win a quarter final. It becomes this all encompassing thing. So there is a life after a quarter final for us. And if it's just a start for now, I mean, obviously they've got to get to a quarter final, but it'd be a disaster if this great team wins a quarter final and goes, okay, well, party time now, let's all relax and get beaten in the semi-final. Because I know that the team in 2011 still are unbelievably rankled by the fact that they got beaten by Wales in a quarter final. Like, what an opportunity is the phrase that was used this week by one of that team, who was particularly angry about the fact that they got beaten 8 years ago.
I think that, you know, stuff like that does stay with you, and you have moments in your career that will stay with you forever that you look back and you're kind of like, oh. But, you know, I think this group over the last 2 weeks to 10 days, I just think there's been a complete pivot shift in what they're doing, how they're going about their business. And it's literally, I know it's very cliched, but they are literally game by game by game. And that is it. They know that they want to be playing the final weekend. And to be going for, you know, to be, to hold their rank as number one in the world.
The out half decision to go with Carty, once you make the decision that you're not going to start Sexton, you probably have to start Carty because he's been fittest for longer and looks like he's in good form, and Carby hasn't had the opportunity yet to re-establish himself as the official backup, and there's plenty of time he can play against Russia, assuming he's fit in that game. But Carty is not a game manager. He's not somebody who is going to just come in and kick to the corner and push the pack up and find touch with every kick. He is going to attack the line. He's going to look for offloads. He's going to pass the ball. And that might not be the game that we want. I mean, we all want that game, right? That's exactly the game that we want in the big games. But maybe against Japan, you don't really want to do that early on. You just want to kick to the corner and bore the pants off them.
You know, I think everyone can adapt to what they want for this specific game. They're, you know, whatever their you know, their game plan is going to be, he's the general. He needs to stick to that, and he needs to drive that forward. He has the capabilities to kick the corner. He's got a very good kicking game, but he does have, you know, he's probably in between where Joey Carberry is and Johnny is in terms of, you know, it's a nice mixture of that maverick style with his chip kicks and taking the ball to the line, looking for those offloads and being able to control a game. I think he's done exceptionally well over the last period of time since he's been involved. And I think, for me, and this is again going back to the environment, a show for the environment is exactly what happened when, you know, the Jack Carty kicks, it's a little chip kick in behind. Chris Farrell runs on, catches the ball, and then he flicks an unbelievable offload out the back to Luke McGrath. Those guys technically aren't your starters. So when you have guys that are looking to push to become starters, that feel the freedom, for the want of a better word, and feel the that they can just play off the cuff like that, throw that offload, that's a show of the confidence that they have, not only in themselves, but in the environment. So there, and when your environment is probably, and everyone, you know, your environment, when you're managing environment, your environment is only as good as your bench, or the people, more importantly, who aren't playing, because they probably contribute to how the attitude of the environment, how everything is going on off the pitch, they contribute to that way more. If you have a guy that's on the bench that isn't happy, or a guy that's not that's not involved at all, that isn't happy, he can kind of drain the life out of people and take everything down. But when you see guys coming off the bench having performances like that and doing those things individually, it's kind of like, whoa, this environment is really, like, they have the confidence and the belief that they can do it, but also know that that the environment wants to see that. You know, that was my biggest take from last weekend and in those plays. And the guys, that they're getting awarded now. They're starting this weekend. They have another opportunity to go on. And then you have the likes of Joey Carby, who hasn't really featured yet. Robbie Henshaw, who hasn't featured yet. Those guys that are going to drive the standards even further.
Yeah, I get the feeling that Chris Farrell didn't start the tournament, but Joe Schmidt's looking for an excuse to make him a starter. When you think back to just how well he performed when he broke into the team first in that Six Nations 2 years ago now, and he's the archetypal Schmidt player who has a brilliant pass, who's technically very proficient, but he's also massive, so it's kind of a dream come true.
Yeah, well, he has a great balance to his game, and he's such, you know, especially around green zone attack, his ball carries in those in the 22, it really add a massive difference. Not that Robbie Henshaw is small or Bundiaki is small, but I think he really does offer something in those close quarter carries. And he does have the ability to throw, you know, a really nice long ball off both sides. So he has a lovely balance to his game. And it just, it really is, you know, he was the outside shot. You know, there's someone that you probably, it was probably between him, Conway and Will Addison, you know, one out of those three was going to miss. Now you're looking at two of those three potentially really pushing for a starting on their performance.
Yeah,
their performance so far.
Which is exactly what you want, really. And I do want to talk about Jack Conan, because obviously Greg Fika's done press this morning where he's talked about the fact that there's a possibility Conan might end up having to be sent home because the injury is just at the wrong time. It's not like it's a particularly severe injury, somebody stood in his foot, but it would keep him out for long enough that they would like to have somebody else available to be on the bench. That would be likely Jordy Murphy. Now, Jordy Murphy's never let Ireland down. Is there a significant step down from Conan to Murphy, just in terms of form at the moment?
I wouldn't think so. I think, I think Jack, to be fair, has been, he's been on a nice level, but he's been producing kind of, sevens all the time. CJ last weekend obviously had a big step up, but you could question where his form was as well. So someone like with the experience and, Jordy Murphy is very much a Joe Smith player. You know, he's been in Joe Smith environments for a long time and he's excelled in them. So, he is someone that the experience that he has coming in, you're not necessarily going to lose anything. He probably is a different type of player to Jack Cohn in terms of he's not this massive abrasive ball carrier that Conan is, but he certainly adds a bit more versatility to your back row in the fact that he can play all across the back row, and certainly adds to a bit more balance that you can go for if you want to go all, with two big ball carriers at 8 and 6, if you wanted to have someone like, for a game like Reece Ruddock at 6, CJ Stander at 7, and then Jordy Murphy at 7. That has a nice balance to it as well, because they'll play off each other. So, I think he'll add something to the environment. You are losing something small, but he'll certainly add his own style to the environment when he joins in.
All right, a reminder, our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. From that perspective, when do you make the decision? Is it like if Conan's only going to be back the week of the South Africa game, do you say that's too late because, you need to train that full week? If he's back for the last group game, you say, okay, that's fine. Like, what's the pressure point here, do you think?
Probably you have to make that decision as soon as you can, because, you have to get up to grasp with what's going on within camp. So to be fair to the person that's coming out, you need to make sure that they're ready and that they're out there as soon as possible. So I would say they'll probably leave this weekend, but in camp they probably know exactly where they're going to go already, and probably a decision might be made publicly early next week.
Right, so the decision might already indeed have been made. The one other point about this, and I'm,
either way that is, like either yeah, way, whether he, you know, whether he's staying or go, you'd have to.
I was talking with somebody yesterday who may be going to Tokyo next year for the Olympics as part of the backroom team, and they were making the point that what they've been told anyway is the jet lag is so bad heading that direction that you basically need, for every hour you're losing, you need 2 days to acclimatise properly if you're going to be able to perform in an athletic capacity. I think it's grand for fans going out there on the piss, just to allay any fears that anybody might have when they hear that. But basically, 8 hours.
The longer you stay up, the easier it is to.
Yeah, exactly. The 16 days is like what you'd need to be able to. That is fully gone from your system and you feel human. So if there is somebody who we might need for, the last group game, that decision does have to get made very quickly.
Yeah, well, you want them to have some kind of game time underneath their belt. You want them to have maybe, 15 to 20 minutes off a bench before you are potentially looking at starting them. So if there was going to be involvement, you'd probably look at, getting them out there and then maybe getting involved last pool game.
What do you think this game is going to be like? Because, this is a World Cup final for Japan. They'll have one more World Cup final against Scotland, which might give them an opportunity to get out of the group stages. I mean, maybe we're underestimating their next opponent in the competition after us as well. But what do you think is going to happen?
I think, I personally think they're probably going to have one eye on Scotland, subconsciously even, at least, that they know that is their big opportunity to get out all going. That's the game against, their next game goes well. But I think it's going to be a case, there's going to be a huge amount of emotion. It's different to last week. Last week was probably nervousness rather than emotion. It was, it's here, we've built up to this, we now need to get through it. And I think you could see that in their first half performance. That was like, oh, what's, Russia score early, and then it's like, oh, what's going on? It was kind of that nervous energy. It took time to last and go. Where here, it's going to be, there's a huge emotional standpoint in the fact that they're playing, technically the best team in the world at the moment. Someone that's performed very well, their main group rivals, if they're looking at winning it, which I'm sure they have spoken about winning their group, as unlikely as it is, but they have probably spoke about it within their own environment. So it's going to be a massive emotional task for them to to cater for that and to emotionally deal with it, and then to deal with the pressure of the first 15 to 20 minutes. You know, Ireland can just soak so much pressure up and be happy to let a team play and then just kick the ball back to them and say, right, keep going, keep going. And, you know, Ireland would have the mentality that if it gets to 6-0 with 70 minutes to go, Japan will crack and it could end up 23-0. You know, like, it's that kind of, Ireland have that capability to do that, just to suffocate teams in the form that they're in from last week. So I think it's going to be one of those old school games where 20, 25 minutes and then Ireland just kind of hopefully just take control and just keep digging away.
We are a massive favourite for this game, obviously 16-1 on. This group of players has been much better at dealing with the favouritism tag over a long period of time, notwithstanding the start of the Six Nations last year when we were massive favourites at home against England and they completely annihilated us. It's a different situation, right?
Oh, completely different situation. And I think the mentality with where everyone seems to be at the moment, that it's different. It's just one game at a time. We get this done and we move on. You know, this is just their second performance, and that's, they know that a performance wins this game.
Yeah.
They've been in these emotional places before. They've been in these pressure situations. You know, they're used to this pressure cooker, where Japan necessarily aren't, and that's going to be a big plus tomorrow.
Two other quick things I wanted to ask you about. One was the three-match ban for Rhys Hodge. We saw our first red card in the England-USA game. The referees have been criticised for missing this kind of stuff. The TMO has been criticised for missing this kind of stuff. I wouldn't be terribly surprised if there was a number of red cards now for a couple of games in a row while this all settles back down again.
Yeah, we see, that's the problem, that, you know, it was something that was flagged previously and then it's not necessarily reffed according to the guidelines. And then your second chance to pick it up live on the day, you know, the TMO is not picking it up either. So they're not, that's not helping the situation. And then there's a reaction to this and a massive clampdown, which then might see, you know, something that is probably a 60-40 against being sent off. And that's where the issue comes from, because the consistency is not across the board. But, you know, I think the guidelines are pretty simple in this. They've laid them out, and, you know, there was, you know, being given a 3-week ban for a challenge, that shows that, guys, this wasn't refereed properly. It wasn't picked up by the TMO. It needs to be dealt with now in the correct way. And that's the disappointing. It took three times for it to get resolved. That's the issue. And I think now the referees need to, you know, probably not react to the pressure as much, but just referee them as isolated incidents. And if there's an opportunity, take your time, look at the screen, communicate with your TMO and make an informed decision at that moment. That's the most important thing, rather than being rash and, okay, headshot, straight away, red card. Let's just take our time, breathe, everyone reset, and then look at it with clear eyes.
Yeah. My concern is that something happens in the first 20 minutes and there's a red card and suddenly the game takes on a life of its own from an Ireland perspective. So presumably they talk about what's happened this week, given that the politics is something that the referees will be aware of, the players need to be aware of the politics that the referee is aware of, and obviously Schmidt has a reputation for leaving no stone unturned. So presumably the Ireland camp are looking at the Rhys Hodge 3 game, the red card yesterday, and going, first 20 minutes, don't be hitting high, make sure everything is chop tackle if it needs to be, and if the ball gets away, the ball gets away, but don't be getting sent off, and after that the referee will calm down a bit.
Yeah, I think completely. As you said already, his reputation precedes himself in that regard. And their discipline, Ireland's discipline, is generally very, very good. And all Joe Smith's sides, their discipline is excellent. So I don't think that'll be a factor for them. But it is something all the time, and there'll be trends that'll be spoken about. You know, there'll be referee footage from, you know, for, you know, nearly up to 2 or 3 years ago on laptops, on, you know, and there'll be, someone will be presenting, whether it be Mervyn Murphy, who'll be presenting for 15 to 20 minutes on the referee, what his trends are, what he looks at. So all that stuff will be covered, and it's generally covered every week.
Yeah, okay. The other thing was the whole notion of testing for school kids. This is something that came up at our roadshow, and Brian O'Driscoll was making the point that one of the most at-risk groups, one of the most vulnerable groups, are school kids who aren't going to make it or who feel like they're not the right size, and we're being told, you know, you need to bulk up over the summer. At the moment, the only players who are getting passed, getting tested in underage rugby in Ireland are the ones who are on the professional pathway through the academy system or in tournaments where there is parental consent. But the main schoolboy competitions, we don't have testing at the moment. You know, you're fairly familiar with this age group. What's your take on the whole thing?
To be honest, it's all about education, in my opinion, making sure that everyone is educated in the right way, knowing that it's, you know, that if you do something like this, that's probably it. But I do think that there's two things that really for this to go ahead, and if it is something that the IRFU want to do, you know, obviously child welfare and parental consent is a massive thing, and that has to be looked after, because, you know, drug testing is not simple. You know, I've done it plenty of times myself, and you know, in terms of dealing with under 18s, there is going to be a massive issue there in that regard, for what's just technically involved with giving a sample. Outside of that, I do think that education, as I already said, is key to making sure that if you're in charge, like I'm, for instance, I'm in charge of a senior environment now in Newbridge College, you know, it's spoken about. There is no need for supplements. There is no need for anything. As long as you're looking after your diet, as long as you're controlling, you know, you're taking on board what the coaches are giving, you know, like we essentially are a professional rugby program based around school for 8 months until however long they're knocked out of the cup. Like my guys are in the gym this morning at 7 o'clock. They'll go to school. They'll have they'll have an individual line out and back session at lunchtime. They'll be on the pitch at 10 to 4 for an hour and 5 minutes today. But I think it is something that certainly needs to be spoken about. And the issues and the problems that can be created if you do go down that route, certainly. But, you know, I think anyone that's in charge of an environment in schools rugby needs to be aware of what dangers are out there in terms of getting the stuff, how available it is, everything, so that we are, make sure that we are world leaders in this, in this area, because currently our schools system is the envy of most rugby playing nations. We need to make sure that we're ahead of the game when it comes to stuff like this. And, you know, whether if it's testing becomes available, then perfect. You know, let's make sure it's available. It's done in the correct way. You know, full child welfare guidelines are all adhered to, and that it's, but I think for me, it starts with education and, you know, show what you need to do to become a pro, and then show that, you know, sometimes, you know, the level of guy that makes it is so small, but you need to be able to fill your potential in your way and make sure that it's done in the right way.
Yeah. All right, Tony, we'll leave it there. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks a million, man.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.